Okay, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. I thank Yeshiva University and the Arbisfeld family for, you know, inviting me and for having this program of Kol Olam Medrasha Yom Rishon. I thank you, Rabbi Shor, for organizing and inviting me to speak. I wanted to give you today a shiur based on this coming week's Parsha, Parsha Shmini, and a topic that has intrigued me for quite some time. You know, we all like a good mystery. We all like, you know, when we don't know the ending or we don't know what's going on, we don't know why something's going on. It's always fun, you know, to try to solve a mystery. And, you know, if you read through the Torah, there's thousands of mysteries throughout the Torah. And it's something that certainly is a passion of mine. Two of my courses in Stern College are called Ambiguities of the Torah, where we try to solve the different mysteries. And I'm sure we're all aware that there's so many Mefarshim who solve these mysteries in different ways. So what I want to do today is analyze a very specific mystery that comes in this week's Parsha, which starts us already in source number one, which is the story of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu are the two sons, the older sons of Aaron, who in this coming week's Parsha, source number one, Parsha Shmini, they seem to do some sort of religious act on Yom HaShmini, on the eighth day, which is the Chanukas HaMishkan. We're inaugurating the Mishkan. And they do some sort of act. They give a ketoret, they give a korban. And the next thing we know, Vateitze Esh Melefnei Hashem, a fire comes down, Vatochalotam Vayamutu Lefnei Hashem, and they are killed. Now, certainly this idea of two sons being killed seems to fit a pattern that we have in the Torah. If you look with me at source number two, we certainly do see the two sons of Yehuda, Aaron, Onan, who seem to die, Datan and Aviram in the story of Korach, Hophni and Pinchas, the two sons of Eli, who die as well in Shmuel Aleph, Machlon and Kilion in the famous story of Ruth, right, the sons of Elimelech and Naami. But if I look closer at those stories, it seems very clear that there's something that's wrong that they're doing within the stories. If you look at source number two now with me, where I underline and bolded, that's how you follow along with me very quickly, you know, Aaron Onan seem to do something that is ra b'nei Hashem. They seem to do something that is bad. And first we talk about Aaron doing something ra, then we talk about Onan, vayera b'nei Hashem, asher asa. Whatever it was that he did something that is wrong, which is why he dies. In the story of Datan v'Aviram, of course, in the Korach rebellion, rebelling against Moshe, possibly to Aaron, hanashim harisha'im ha'ela, they are called evil people, they are called risha'im. Clearly they are doing something wrong. The ground opens up and swallows them. Hophni and Pinchas are called B'nai Blial. They're doing something wrong within the Mishkan. Asher lo yadu et Hashem. They didn't know Hashem. Machlon and Kilion, it doesn't say it outright within the Psukim, but it's within the context of Elimelech dying, and then they die, and seems to be right after they leave Eretz Yisrael and they marry Moabi women. So it sounds like we're talking about stories of sin where people die. But when I look at our story, the story of Nadav and Avihu, nowhere does it say Vayasu Rabbe and Hashem. There doesn't seem to have that clarity of the Psukim telling me that they did something wrong. And I look through the Psukim and I'm really finding it hard to even understand what is it that they did wrong. And I want to seemingly defend them. The reason why I want to defend them is, first of all, they're the children of Aaron. And not only are they the children of Aaron, if you look with me at source number three, they were chosen. They specifically were chosen for the very important job of being the Kohanim, right? If you look at source three, Vatahi Karev Alechat Aaron Achicha Ve'et Banav. The children of Aaron are chosen to become the Kohanim. And they're even specified by name. Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, Itamar. These are the children that are chosen. And not only that, source number four, they're chosen in this past week's Parsha, Parshat Tzav, in Vayikra Parachet, right before this story, source four, Vayakrev Moshe Tzbnei Aaron. He takes the children of Aaron and he dresses them to give them the position of being Kohanim. So Nadav and Avihu seem to be chosen in a very strong way. And not only that, source number five, Nadav and Avihu are the one of the only people selected to come closer to Hashem during the time of Matan Torah. In Shmot Parach Avdalin, specified out is Moshe, of course, and Yoshua, but Aaron and Nadav and Avihu and Shivim Mizikne Yisrael, right? The 70 elders, Aaron, and specifically only his two older sons, Nadav and Avihu, they get to go a little bit closer than everybody else to the Shechina, to the presence of God. Pasuk Tet, Vayal Moshe Aaron and Nadav Avihu, they get to come closer, Vayeru et Elokei Yisrael, they see God in a much closer way way than everyone else. And therefore, it really bothers us a little bit more when we get to this week's Parsha, and all of a sudden they seem to die, and we're not sure why. The Psukim don't seem to be clear, and we don't know. Is it a huge sin that they did, and therefore they're deserving to die? Is it a smaller sin, but they're elevated? There's something about them that means they get punished more harshly. We're not really sure. Now, I am sure many of you have heard many shiurim on Nadav and Avihu and go through the mefarshim of what they've done wrong, but I want to do it a little bit differently based on the way that I like to teach. And the way I like to teach is by teaching methodology. When you have a mystery, how do you solve that mystery in the text of the Torah? And I'm using this as a case study. We're going to do the example of Nadav and Avihu, but we're going to learn how one does it in any story that's in Tanakh. And therefore, instead of just reading mefarshim, we're going to understand the mefarshim. Where did they come from? Why did they choose that answer versus all the other answers? What were they looking at within the psukim that made them choose that answer? So the first methodology that I would like to look at by analyzing the story itself is to try to figure out, you know, again, we're assuming something is wrong here by the fact that they're dying within the psukim, but what is it that the pasuk or the psukim are highlighting for me to realize is the essence of the sin, what they did wrong? And the first methodology that I'd like to look at is repeating words. Very often the Torah will repeat a word over and over again to tell you, look at this word. There's something about this word that I'm supposed to be focused on in order to understand the mystery or what's hidden within the psukim. If you look with me at source number 6, I want to show you that the story of Nadav and Avihu dying, or the mentioning, I should say, of Nadav and Avihu dying, appears 4 different times within the Torah, not just in our Parsha, but 3 other times besides our Parsha. And I want to see what words or what seems to be repeated over and over again during those 4 different references to our story. So if you look at source number 6 with me, what you see very clearly is we have our Parsha, that's Vayikra Yud, you have Vayikra Ted, which is a few prekim later. And then it's mentioned twice in Bamidbar, once in the beginning of Bamidbar when we're replacing Nadav and Avihu with their brothers, Elazar and Itamar. And then Bamidbar Chavav when we're counting Am Yisrael and we're talking about some of the people who died and why they died, they're mentioned again. And if I look at all 4, you could see, because I underlined and bolded, the word Lifnei Hashem or Milifnei Hashem appears 7 times. Within our psukim, source number 6, that's this week's Parsha, right? It tells us they take by a Krivu Lifnei Hashem, Vateitze Eit Milifnei Hashem, Vatochalo Tamayimutu Lifnei Hashem. 3 different times we are told before Hashem, before Hashem. In Vayikra Tadvav, we see it again, Birkirvatam Lifnei Hashem. In Bamidbar Dalet, 2 times, right? Vayamat Nadav and Avihu, they died Lifnei Hashem because they gave an Eish Zara Lifnei Hashem. And again, Bamidbar Chavav, Vayamat Nadav and Avihu, why? Bekrivam Eish Zara Lifnei Hashem. 7 different times we have this phrase, Lifnei Hashem. It sounds like the Psukim are telling us this is really important, that they are Lifnei Hashem in this exact moment. So we have to understand, what does it mean to be Lifnei Hashem? And what is the Pasuk trying to tell me by emphasizing this phrase? Is it that because they are Lifnei Hashem, they're judged more harshly? Is it because they're Lifnei Hashem, they're supposed to act differently? What does it really mean? So if I go back in time a little bit to Sefer Bereishit to try to understand this phrase, Lifnei Hashem, I go to source number 7 and I see 2 different times we have a reference to being Lifnei Hashem by Avraham himself. So when it comes to Avraham, Avraham seems to have this phrase mentioned about him. He's Hitalech Lefanai V'yatamim, Hashem says about Avraham. He should walk before me, be before me. And it tells us Avraham Odenu Omed Lifnei Hashem. Avraham was Lifnei Hashem. It sounds like when you are in the presence of Hashem, if you have the ability to speak to Hashem, communicate with Hashem, there seems to be this idea of being in the presence Lifnei Hashem. We have the opposite when it comes to Kayin here in source 8. When he sins, he gets thrown out from being within Lifnei Hashem. Vayetze Kayin Milifnei Hashem. He's like rejected from the presence of Hashem. And if you look at Shaddal to explain this phrase, Mina Makom Shehu Lifnei Hashem. He's kicked out of the location where he would be in front of Hashem. What is that location? Hu Hagan V'Hadama HaKroveila. It's near Gan Eden. It's near the place where he communicated with God, where I bolded, it's a specific place where God's presence, his Shechina, seems to dwell. And therefore, if we continue along until Shemos, it sounds like the presence of God is no longer with a person, but rather gets put into a location of the Aron, if you look at source number 9, where we put Lifnei Hashem is referring to, as you see here in Rashi, Lifnei Haaron, in front of the Aaron. And therefore, without question, when we're building the Mishkan, this understanding of Lifnei Hashem would therefore be referencing the Mishkan itself. And when you look at the Psukim referencing the Mishkan constantly, over and over again, that phrase, Lifnei Hashem, over and over again. And therefore, it sounds like in this very specific location where Nadav and Avihu are standing, it has a status of Lifnei Hashem. And therefore, you can try to understand, what is this coming to teach me? Is it that because they were Lifnei Hashem, what they did was inappropriate, and therefore God had to punish them harshly? Or is it that they literally went Lifnei Hashem? They went somewhere that was inappropriate. They went somewhere where they didn't belong. If you look at source number 10, which is our second reference to Nadav and Avihu dying in Vayikra Tedvav, right after we have that reference in Pasuk Bet, we actually have a specific halacha. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, daber al Aaron achicha, al yavo b'chol eit al hakodesh. You cannot go whenever you want into the Kodesh. You can't go whenever you want into the Mishkan. Comes Rashi based on the fact that this pasuk comes right after the reference to Nadav and Avihu dying. Ah, maybe that solves our mystery and tells me why they died. Shelo yamut kedarach shemetu banav. Hashem is saying, what just happened? Nadav and Avihu died. So I'm telling you now to tell Aaron, don't do what they did. What did they do? They decided they could go Lifnei Hashem when they couldn't. You're allowed Lifnei Hashem in certain situations, when certain, you know, things that you are required to do, you're allowed to go Lifnei Hashem. You're not allowed to just go Lifnei Hashem. You're not allowed to just go into the Mishkan whenever you want. And therefore, Nadav and Avihu were punished for going Lifnei Hashem. Abarbanel takes it one step further here in source number 11. Lifnei Hashem is not referring to the Mishkan, but rather even closer. It's referring to the Kodesh HaKadashim. Shehu sheniknesu lifnei lifnim b'li rishus. They thought on that day they could even go into the holiest of holies. They could go all the way inside, which of course they did not have permission to do, and therefore they died. So far we can understand this repeating phrase, Lifnei Hashem, of they did something inappropriate, which we'll discuss more in a few minutes, because they were Lifnei Hashem, they're punished more harshly, or they literally went Lifnei Hashem, they went to a location they weren't allowed to go. But there's a third possibility. Maybe, yes, it's true, Lifnei Hashem is referring to being near the Shechina of Hashem, but maybe that day Lifnei Hashem meant something different. That day, the day of Yom HaShmini, the presence of Hashem was much closer. The presence of Hashem had come down into the Mishkan. And therefore, being Lifnei Hashem had a very different significance on that day. They acted inappropriately for that day. They could have done what they did on a different day, but they chose to do it on Yom HaShmini. If you look at source number 12 with me, you see the emphasis of Lifnei Hashem specifically on Yom HaShmini in this week's Parsha. Yom HaShmini kara Moshe Aaron Uvanav, and he calls everyone together. And what happens? Everyone must come Lifnei Hashem, specifically on Yom HaShmini. Why? Ki Hayom Hashem Nira Alecha. Today's the day God's coming down. We're all going to be able to see Hashem. And it's not just particular leaders, but rather Vayikrevu Kol Ha'edah Vayamdu Lifnei Hashem. Everybody gets to be Lifnei Hashem today. Why? Because Vayira Alechem Kavod Hashem. Hashem is coming down today. We're all going to experience Hashem. And therefore, maybe because we're all going to experience Hashem, things must be different. And we certainly know that that's true in many other situations. Like, let's say, for example, in source 13, when the Mishkan was completed, this is the very end of Sefer Shemot, and God again comes down into the Mishkan. Kvod Hashem Malei Et HaMishkan. The Spirit of Hashem is in the Mishkan. Lo yachal Moshe levo al Ohel Moed. Moshe has been coming in and out of the Ohel Moed constantly. That day, he can't go in. On that day, why? The Anan and Kavod Hashem is filling the Mishkan. Moshe can't go in. So on certain days, because the presence of Hashem is there in such a more obvious way, people who normally can approach, people who normally can come close, on that day, you can't, because the Shechina of Hashem is really right there. We see that also, for example, by Matan Torah here in Source 14. Yes, it's true. At Matan Torah, Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, the Shivim Zakenim, they're all allowed to come closer. closer, but they can't come too close. Vinigash Moshe Levado. Moshe gets to go alone. Moshe's on a higher level. He can experience the Lifnei Hashem in a much stronger way. Behem lo yagashu, but they cannot come close. And the Psukim described for us this experience of Lifnei Hashem. The Kavod of Hashem was like an eating fire on the top of the mountain. So Moshe could go close, but nobody else could. So we have this idea on certain days, the Shechina is closer. The Shechina, therefore, doesn't allow you to do what you would normally do. And therefore, maybe one can have a different explanation of what Lifnei Hashem is coming to teach me about Nadav and Avihu. You see, on a regular day, source 15, it is true. V'natznu b'nei Aaron Kohen eish al mizbeach. On a normal day, it is the children of Aaron who bring the fire on the mizbeach. And therefore, Nadav and Avihu possibly were doing what they normally do on a normal day. But says Rashbam, source 15, it wasn't a normal day. You can't do what you normally do. She'ava pisha b'shar yamim. Even though on every other day, this is what they normally do. Hayom lo tziva v'lo ratza Moshe she'avihu eshel hejo. On today, Yom HaShmini, when we are all Lifnei Hashem, No, that's not how the process goes. I don't want you bringing a regular fire. Lefisha hayu mitzapim le'yiritas esh kavoa. No, today a fire is coming from above. Today a fire is coming min hashamayim, from the sky. God is sending down the fire. That's not the process for today on Yom HaShmini. A similar idea is found in Abarbanel, but slightly different. Yes, it's Yom HaShmini. Yes, Yom HaShmini is different, but the fire is not coming down from the sky. Yom HaShmini, Abarbanel compares to Yom Kippurim. It is such a significant day. We are Lifnei Hashem. What's the only day that compares to that? Yom Kippur, when we get forgiven by God. And therefore, what is supposed to happen on Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is different because everything is done by the Kohen Gadol. Aaron was supposed to do it, not his children, Nadav and Avihu. Where I underline, Nasit Ayideh HaKohen Gadol Kavodas Yom HaKippurim. Today, it was supposed to be done by the Kohen Gadol. It was supposed to be like a Yom Kippur. It was supposed to be a much more significant day. Mipnei Kavod Hayom V'Chanukas HaMizbeach Siva Sheyate Aaron HaKol V'lo Echad Mibanav. Aaron was supposed to do it all. Today was such a significant day. We're all Lifnei Hashem. It wasn't supposed to be done by his children. So just taking a step back and looking at the phrase Lifnei Hashem so many times, we already come up with four different possibilities of what Nadav and Avihu possibly did wrong. Number one, they acted incorrectly of being Lifnei Hashem. They were just Lifnei Hashem, and therefore they acted in a way that was wrong. Number two, they went Lifnei Hashem. They went somewhere they weren't supposed to go, into the Mishkan when they weren't supposed to, into the Kodesh Kodashim when they weren't supposed to. Or today is a special day. Today is Lifnei Hashem. It's Yom HaShmini. Hashem's presence is right there. And they got too close. They went too close to God's presence. Or because today is Yom HaShmini, because today is not a regular day, they did what was supposed to be done on a regular day, but that's not what was supposed to be done today. All learned out from the phrase Lifnei Hashem. If I go back to the pasuk and I look for more repeating words, I do find another phrase that leads me in a slightly different direction. And that's the phrase here starting in source 16, Esh Zara. In three of the places, this phrase is used. So it's not equal to the seven times we saw Lifnei Hashem, but Esh Zara three times is a pretty significant phrase. In our parsha, it tells us, Vayakrivu Lifnei Hashem Esh Zara, they brought a foreign fire. In Bamidbar Dalet, Bahakrivam Esh Zara, when they brought a foreign fire, and Bamidbar Chavav, again, the recount, same words, Bahakrivam Esh Zara. So we need to understand what is an Esh Zara, and why is that something that's repeated so many times? And you realize, when you go to the discussion, source 17, of the halachos of giving a ketoret, which was the korban they were giving, it specifically says, Lo ta'alu alav a ketoret zara. The same language, you can't use a foreign ketoret. You can't do something foreign when it comes to a ketoret. Why? Because Kodesh Kadashim Hu La Hashem. It is holy. And what you all of a sudden realize, based on the language of the psukim, is that we have opposites. Zara and Kodesh, Kedusha. Something that is Kadosh is not Zar, is not foreign. It is something that is considered holy. And we have that comparison between these two words in a lot of places. I gave you an example here in source 18. Kol Zar lo yachal Kodesh. If you are a Zar, you can't eat something that is holy, because these two things cannot go together. And if something that is Zar eats something that is holy or does something that is holy, then what happens is, Hazar hikarev, you might. Death is the result. If you try to put these two things together, death is what occurs. And therefore, if I go back to our phrase, it sounds like they did exactly what they aren't supposed to do by bringing some sort of fire that was foreign, which was the opposite of what we would call something that is kadosh, and therefore their death would be the result of that. But I want to add on something to this idea, because there's a repeating phrase that I would say is repeating in a different way. Asher lo tziva Hashem is a phrase that only appears once within the story, but it seems repetitious based on its location. If you look again, it's the same psukim again, source 19, just to not go back and forth. It's easier to keep giving you the psukim again, highlighting different words. But in our parsha, when it says Esh Zara, right afterwards, it says Asher lo tziva otam, that they weren't commanded to do. Now, this seems very odd. Obviously, if it was foreign and it wasn't something that was commanded to do, like that seems to be obvious that those two things would go together. So therefore, why do I need the repetition? Ibn Ezra even points it out, like it seems obvious if Midah Tamasu, if they did it on their own, they brought this Esh Zara, lo b'tzivu l'hakter ketoret, clearly they weren't commanded to bring it, right? That seems to be very obvious. And also therefore to say Esh Zara, it just seems like something that is very repetitious. And therefore, again, repetition leads us to solutions, leads us to answers, and allows us to understand what the pasuk is trying to tell me is what they did wrong. If you look at the Bechor Shor, and he says, simple, they were commanded not to give an Esh Zara, where I gave it to you here in small in source 20, because I just read you this pasuk, lo ta'alu ala ketoret zara. That's what they're told in Shemot Laman, never give a foreign ketoret, never. So comes Bechor Shor and says, literally, Yom HaShmini, we're sanctifying the Mishkan. What do they do? One of the things they're told not to do, says Bechor Shor. She has here aleim shalola. So they were told, don't do this, and quotes this pasuk, and therefore they did this. So therefore they have to lefichach ne and shu. They had to be punished. How do you get punished? Well, for zara, death. Death is the punishment. But there's another way to look at it, which is not necessarily that they did something that they were commanded not to do, but rather that they did something that they weren't specifically told to do. Meaning, Bechor Shor's answer is they were told, don't do an Esh Zara, and they did it. The second answer is they weren't told anything, but they did something within the process of the Mishkan that they weren't told to do. Meaning, when it comes to the Mishkan, you're only allowed to do what Hashem tells you to do. Every step of the way, you can't come up with something creative. You can't decide to do something else. Everything is about what does God tell you to do? That's what we do when it comes to the Mishkan. If you look at source 21, there's an emphasis always. Vayas Arnu Banavis Kol HaDvar Masher Tziva Hashem Biyad Moshe. This is before our story, obviously, but there's an emphasis when it comes to the Mishkan, Aaron and his sons always do what they are commanded by God. That's what they do. Because when it comes to Mishkan, you need to do what Hashem tells you. And you know what happens if you don't? If you don't do exactly what Hashem says, you will die. As the pasuk tells us here in source 21, if Aaron listens and does everything he's supposed to do, lifnei Hashem, when he is before Hashem in the Mishkan, lo yamut. That's the only way he won't die. And therefore, it's not about Hashem said no and they said yes. It's that Hashem never said to do it. And they decided to do something on their own that they were never told to do. And this is exactly what the Ramban brings down as the issue of Nadav and Avihu. Yamar b'chol makom kasher tziva Hashem b'yad Moshe, constantly in the Mishkan. It's what they were commanded to do. This is what they were commanded to do. Aval b'kan mipnei shehotzifu al hamitzvah lo amar kein. They decide to add something. They weren't told to do this. Ki lo asu kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. They didn't do what they were commanded, but rather they did something extra. V'onosaf aleh mashamar b'esh zara asher lo tziva otam. That's what the pasuk is telling me. They did something on their own. They did something that they weren't told to do. So you might take a step back and say, Ramban, okay, they did something they weren't told to do. Why is that such a big deal? Why is it such a problem? But let's remember, they were lifnei Hashem. Says Shadal, source 22, when it comes to the Mishkan, especially on Yom HaShmini, when we are inaugurating the Mishkan, when we are starting the process, you have to do everything that you are told exactly, precisely, because this is the lesson for the future of how we're going to deal with the Mishkan. Says Shadal in source 22, same as Ramban, they died because they added something Hashem didn't tell them to do. So why is that such a big big deal. Ratza Hashem lezareiz et Aaron v'etzbanav sheyu zehirim b'inyanei ha'avoda. Because you got to be careful when it comes to the avoda of working in the Mishkan. Shelo lahachlif afilu davar katan. You can't change a thing. If Hashem tells you to do X, you do X. You can't decide to do something different. And we certainly have that idea in other situations as well. And I gave you one example here in Source 23. When Yahushua is told to give over the Mesorah, giving over the Torah, you can't change anything. And that's exactly what he's told. Be careful. Al tasur mimenu yamin usmol. Don't go to the right. Don't go to the left. If you want to be successful, do exactly as you are told. And that's exactly what happens in Yahushua Parachet when he gives over the Mesorah. There are certain things dealing with the Mishkan, dealing with Mesorah. You can't change a thing. You can't do anything different than what God tells you to do. And therefore, it is possible that the idea here of Esh Sarah, even though it sounds like, what's the big deal? So they did a foreign fire. Why is that a big deal? Because when it comes to the Mishkan, you need to do everything exactly as God tells you to do. But I want to add on another suggestion, and that takes us in a slightly different direction, looking for another phrase that is repetitive, but also unusual. If you look at Source 24, this is not found in our Parsha, but in Bamidbar Gimel, which is the third time it is repeated, this story or the mentioning of their death, it has this very strange phrase, Ubanim lo hayu lahem. They didn't have any children. A strange thing to say. Now you might say, okay, no, it's not so strange. We're talking about the line of passing down the kahuna, and we're hearing that Aaron had four sons, two of them died, and they didn't have children. So obviously it doesn't get passed down through their children because they died and they didn't have any children. So I do understand why it would be mentioned. However, I did say to you, this story is mentioned four times in Torah, but it happens to be it's mentioned five times in Tanakh because in Divrei Hayamim, it is mentioned again. And there again, this strange phrase is used, Vayamat Nadav Aviv Lifnei Avihemam in Source 24, Ubanim Lo Hayulahem. There it is again. They didn't have any children. So comes the Gemara based on this repetitive language within these two psukim to say, maybe this is what they did wrong. And this is a fascinating idea brought down in the Gemara Yevamos when discussing the idea of, or the mitzvah of, Pruervu, having children. And it discusses a case of someone on purpose not having children. And it says as follows. If you on purpose, not because you can't, not on purpose, have no children at all, and we're talking about a man who's chayav and puravu, shene emar ubanim lo hayu lahem, referring to our pasuk, ha hayu lahem banim lo metu, seems to imply if Nadav and Avihu had children, maybe they wouldn't have died. The Gemara seemingly pointing out that maybe an aspect of their sin or the complete of their sin is that they on purpose don't have children. Now, this seems to be a bit bizarre, seems to be a little bit out of the box of what we would expect until we go back to our parallels of this other duos that I mentioned in the very beginning of Shir, who seem to die in parallel, our two sons here who die as well. If you look at the story of Er and Onan, Source 25, which is, of course, the sons of Yehuda, there the pasuk is very, very clear, at least with the second son, that he on purpose tries not to have children. He on purpose tries not to impregnate his wife. He does not want to fulfill whatever aspect of Yibam they had in those days. And therefore, he didn't want to make a child for his brother, a little bit selfish or a lot selfish. And therefore, he on purpose does not impregnate his wife. And the Gemara and Rashi and Radak and many others bring down that based on by the language, he also died, that this was the sin of the older son as well, Er, who did not want his wife to get pregnant and not beautiful. And therefore, both of them sinned in the same way of not having children on purpose. The same idea is brought down as well with our other duo here, Machlon and Kilion, the sons that are found in Megillat Rut, where they also seem to die. And there's a reference to living with their wives for 10 years before they die. And we have this aspect of Pruervu being required to be done, or at least attempted to be done within 10 years. Comes the Dat Mikra, maybe too, Lo Halidu Banim, them not having children, is the issue that we're talking about here. So maybe based on that and the repetition within the psukim, the Gemara is adding on another possibility of what their sin is. Maybe on purpose, they tried not to have children, and that was the reason for what they are punished for here in our story, which is death. So far, with just repetitive language, what we find here is many different possibilities, and again, a combination could be what's at stake. They went where they weren't able to go. They did something that they weren't supposed to do, lifnei Hashem, giving an Esh Sarah. They acted inappropriately on a special day, thinking it was a regular day. They didn't do exactly what Hashem told them to do as Kohanim, and or possibly they didn't have children on purpose. But we're not done. Because the next step after looking at repetitive and strange language is we look at context. We look at what's the story right after our story? What's the story right before our story? Does that shed some light on the story itself? So if I look after the story first, source 26, right after Nadav and Avihu die, we have a strange command. Vayedaber Hashem al Aaron le'mor, yayin v'shechar al tish. Don't drink wine when you go into the Ohel Moed, when you are servicing Hashem in the Mishkan, lo tamutu, and therefore you won't die. Now, of course, it could just be that after we have the story of the Chanukas HaMishkan, we now have a list of rules about how to not die servicing Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan. However, it does seem to be in very close proximity to our story and a little bit of a strange halacha to just stick in. Therefore, based on that, Chazal brings down, maybe this helps us to solve our mystery. The context helps us to solve. And if you look at Vayikra Rabba, in Ani Yodei Mipnei Ma Metu, look at the Psukim, we're not really sure why Nadav and Avihu died. Ela Mimasha Kadosh Baruch Hu Mitzaveh Et Aaron, Ba'omer Lo Yayin V'Shechar Al Teish. Maybe I can learn from context that right afterwards they're told don't drink wine. Ani Yodim Shelo Metu Ela Mipnei HaYayin. Maybe that's why they died. They died because they were drunk on Yom HaShvini going into the Mishkan. And this is brought down by Rashi, which I gave you here as well in source 26, Shatuyayin, Nechnasu LaMikdash, they were drunk and they went into the Mikdash. Now you take a step back and you say, okay, does this make sense? And maybe it does, and maybe I can combine it with some of my other answers. Because they were drunk, that's why they acted inappropriately. You might say, why did they think they could bring an Eshara? Why did they think they could go somewhere they weren't able to really go? Maybe because they didn't fully think it through because they had drunk wine right before, you know, they were supposed to do, you know, whatever was appropriate for them to do, and therefore they didn't think appropriately and they didn't act appropriately. Or I could say, take a step back, and maybe I could look at a different story to shed light as to why Chazal maybe is assuming that they were drunk or they drank something that they weren't supposed to drink. There's one other story about Nadav and Avihu, and I've referenced it a few times, but I didn't finish it out. If you look at source 27, this is the story once again of Moshe and Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, the Shivim Zakenim, who get to come closer at Matan Torah. Moshe then separates himself and gets even closer and speaks to Hashem. And then there's a strange reference to the Atzilei B'nei Yisrael who see Hashem and then Vayachlu Vayishtu. They eat and they drink. If you look at most Mefarshim, which I gave you here, Rashi and Ramban, who are these people? It's including Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu are part of these people who see Hashem and therefore eat and drink. Now, I could look at that in a positive way, as does the Ramban. They ate and drank. Why? Sha'asu simcha v'yom tov ki kein chova l'smach v'kalas haTorah. They're getting the Torah. They're so happy. It's like a wedding, he says. So, of course, what do you do at a wedding? You eat, you drink, you be happy. But maybe I could look at it as that was something that was inappropriate to be done on such a special day. And where do I get that idea from? I get that idea from source 28. The idea that Moshe Rabbeinu, at the exact same time, what do I know about Moshe? Lechem lo achal, umayim lo shasa. For the next 40 days and 40 nights, Moshe, who's experiencing Hashem, knows better. He knows to not eat. He knows to not drink for 40 whole days, as opposed to Nadav and Avihu, who experience Hashem, but not even as close as Moshe, and they're sitting there drinking and they're sitting there eating. Says Ibn Ezra, why does it tell me that? Lahafrish b'neim ben Moshe, to tell us they're not the same as Moshe, right? They didn't understand. Lo hutzrach la'chol arbim yom arbim laila. Moshe doesn't need to eat for 40 days and 40 nights, and they're sitting there eating and drinking. We have another story where eating and drinking seems very inappropriate in the moment, which is, of course, source 29, the story of Yosef. When the brothers throw him in the pit before Yosef is sold, and they are assuming in that moment that Yosef's going to die in the pit, what do they do? Pasuk Chaf Hei, source 29, Vayishvu l'cholechem, they sit down to eat, they sit down for a feast, and it would seem to be a very inappropriate thing to do as their brother is suffering within the pit. And therefore you wonder, is that what Chazal is picking up on? We have this other story where Nadav and Avihu eat and drink, and it seems to be something that's inappropriate. And maybe Hashem said, okay, you couldn't handle the Shechina, you couldn't handle it, I'll forgive you in that moment. But now when you do it again on Yom HaShmini, and you come and you're drunk on Yom HaShmini, now I can't accept that anymore. And therefore, you will die now as the consequence, possibly of both actions that we know of Nadav and Avihu. So that's what I get from the context of looking right afterwards. But what I want to do is look at the context right before. Right before our story, it's a fascinating, fascinating parallel. In source number 30, I gave you one pasuk of it, but I think it's really a very significant to see it inside in this week's, you know, Parsha, when we're reading the Torah, to look at the whole story. But there seems to be a parallel between the good aspect of the story and then the negative aspect. Vayikra Perek Tet versus Vayikra Perek Yud. In Vayikra Perek Tet, we give the korban of Chanukah's HaMishkan. This is the moment we've been waiting for. We've been reading Parsha after Parsha and Shemos of building all the Kelim and building the Mishkan. The Shechina comes in at the end of Shemos, but here it's time for us to really start using that Mishkan, and it's such an exciting moment. Moshe and Aaron present that first korban, vateitze esh melifnei Hashem, a fire comes down from God, vatochal al mizbeach ta'ula vatchalavim, the fire comes down, eats up the korban. It's amazing. It's exciting. It's like the best moment ever. And then, one parag later, but not so many psukim later, we have the same language, but it's a tragedy and it's sad. But teitze esh melifnei Hashem, same words, that fire comes out from Hashem, but tochal otam and eats Nadav and Avihu, eats them up, kills Nadav and Avihu. And we have this kind of parallel moment of the good fire that comes down and the bad fire that comes down. The good fire to accept the korbanot and the bad fire that comes down to kill the sinners. And we have both of those aspects in the Torah constantly. Source 31, I gave you two examples of the good fire. When at Har Sinai, at Matan Torah, the mountain is like burning in fire. We are seeing God. We are experiencing God in the form of a fire. In the Beit HaMikdash, after we finish building the Beit HaMikdash, such parallel language. Eish yardah mehashamayim, fire comes down from the sky, but tochal ha'olav hazvachim, and eats up the korbanos that Shlomo is giving. It's beautiful. And the kavod of Hashem fills the house, fills the Beit HaMikdash, parallel to our story about the Mishkan. But we also have what I would call the bad fire. When Hashem gets mad, when Hashem is angry, sometimes he punishes with fire. Source 32, he even says about himself, Ki Hashem Elokecha Eish Ochlahu Kel Kanei. When I get jealous, when I get upset, I'm like a fire that eats. I eat up the bad things. I eat up the sinners. And we have an example of this story, which is in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar in Perek Yud Aleph, when all of the things start to go bad in Sefer Bamidbar, where we are complaining, the Mitonim, and what happens? V'tivar bam Eish Hashem v'tochal, and eats up the people and kills the people. We have the good fires versus the bad. And this is so beautifully brought down by Rav Hirsch in Source 33. I will just read where I bold. References is made by Dieter Wirt to a rejected offering next to an accepted one. Like, for example, Cain's rejected offering next to Hevel's accepted one. So too, he says, the dead bodies of the priestly youths, referring to Nadav and Avihu, who on account of their offering were killed by the fire of God, just as the same moment that the very same fire had come down to express God's satisfaction with the offering of the people, to protest against every subjective choosing according to one's own ideas in the sphere of our public worship of God. Of course, bringing down a similar idea to what we saw before of them deciding to do it in their own way, Hashem rejecting them by bringing down this bad fire as opposed to the good one that came down a few minutes earlier. Now, this idea of the good fire, the bad fire, the best parallel to it is the Korach story. And of course, anytime you're solving mysteries in the Torah, it's the best, and to me, it's the most funnest part, is when you get to the parallels. What story reminds you of your story that you can learn from? And to me, the very parallel story here is the story of Korach. The story of Korach has so many parallels. Look at Source 34, where I gave you this incredible chart to display it. In both stories, we have people who are giving a ketoret that seemingly should not be giving a ketoret. We have Aaron's children, Nadav, they give a ketoret, and by Korach, you see it's the same words in both of these stories, both of them giving a ketoret that seemingly they are not supposed to give. Both of them have this repetitive language of lifnei Hashem, as I described before about the Nadav and Avihu story. You see it here in the story of Korach as well. And both of them have parallel language of the bad fire coming from the sky to eat up the sinners. We've read the pasuk by Nadav and Avihu many times. Look at the language by Korach. Esh yatsa me'et Hashem v'tochal et v'chamishim u'matayim ish. A fire comes down from Hashem and eats up the 250 men. And therefore, this is a strong parallel between these two stories. And when I look at the story of Korach, there's a message that comes out. Source 35, everyone should remember by the story of Korach, Lo Yikrab Ish Zar, there's our language Zar, Asher Lomi Zara Aaron, Hul Hatir Ketoret. You have to be careful when it comes to a Ketoret. You can't just give a Ketoret whenever you want. Ironically, you have to be from the family of Aaron. In our story, we are from the family of Aaron, but still it was given inappropriately by the children of Aaron. But if I look at the language of Ramban, who compares these two stories, because the Mefarshim pick up on this parallel for sure, look what the Ramban says in Source 35. B'kiyotze balahak shehektir l'nisayon b'chein asabunei Aaron. What's the issue? In the time of Korach, we gave a Ketoret as a test, just like the sons of Aaron. And you take a step back, and I understand this language about Korach, right? They said, we don't know who's supposed to give a Ketoret. We're all Kadosh. We're all supposed to be able to give a Ketoret. That's exactly what they say here in Source 36. Rav lachem ki kol heida kulam kadoshim. We all should be able to give a Ketoret. It's a rebellion against Moshe's leadership, the choice of Aaron as Kohen Gadol, with the restriction of who can give the Korban, right? What does the Ramban mean? So too is what's going on with the sons of Aaron. And all of a sudden we have, based on this parallel, a whole new idea. A whole new idea that Nadav and Avihu, it wasn't just, I want to do something in the Mishkan, but is I want to do something that I know isn't my job, because I'm trying to say I should have this job. This should be the job that I have. I want to overthrow, like in the Korach rebellion, the leadership of Moshe and Aaron. And this idea is found in the Gemara, and I think this is where the Gemara is getting it from, that the sin of Nathan and Avihu is huge. It's them saying, we're taking over for Moshe and Aaron. If I look at the Gemara where I underlined, Amar lo Nadav Avihu, Nadav says to Avihu, Eimatai yamutu shnei zekenim halalu. When are these two old guys referring to Moshe and Aaron going to die? V'ani v'atanan higet ador. When is it our turn to be the leaders? So Amar la HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to them, in his head, clearly, Hanira mi koveretz mi. Let's see who buries who, right? Who's going to die first? This idea is also found, hinted to in the Malbim, in Source 37. Hit avu sheyu berosh b'sheyamutu Moshe ba'aron. What was going on here in the story? They're saying, Moshe and Aaron just gave a korban. Nah, shouldn't be them. It should be us. And they're running in to go give that korban. We're supposed to be the leaders. We're supposed to be here instead of Moshe and Aaron. I think the Gemara in Erevin takes it a little bit less. It's not that I want my father and my uncle to die, but rather we think we should be able to take on more responsibility. Source 38, the Gemara in Erevin, Lo meitu b'nei Aaron ad sheharu halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabban. They're trying to say, no, Moshe, you're wrong. We'll teach a halacha. We're allowed to give this ketoret. It's okay for us to give this ketoret. And similarly, you find that in Shadal, Source 39, their sin was they were conceited. They thought highly of themselves. It wasn't good enough to them to serve their father, to just be the Kohanim. No. We're just like Aaron. We could be Kohanim like Aaron. But Moshe didn't give us a role here today. Moshe, we were supposed to sit on the sidelines. That's no good. We decided we deserve a role. We got up and we did something. And therefore, this idea coming through the parallel of Korach is really strong. What they did wasn't something little. What they did wasn't that, oh, it's a special day, so they did a little bit to the right or to the left. No, they were trying to say, this is our role, Moshe and Aaron. You're wrong. They were trying to step into the shoes of Moshe and Aaron. That's a tremendous thing. Says Rav Hirsch, Source 40, they were only the sons of Aaron. What he's trying to understand is why within the psukim does it keep reminding us, sons of Aaron, sons of Aaron. Why does it? Because it's an important factor here. They were only the sons of Aaron, but they did not consult their father about their ideas, or perhaps just because they were the sons of Aaron, they thought they were above all advice. Maybe that was the issue here, that they thought they were better than Moshe and Aaron, and that would come from the parallel to Korah, the good fire, the bad fire, the good fire that chooses Moshe and Aaron once again, and the bad fire that comes to kill those who are competing against Moshe and Aaron. Aharon, which is, of course, Nadav and Avihu. But before, if you give me five more minutes, I want to come to one more idea through one more parallel. Because there's another story that's so parallel to Nadav and Avihu, but it takes it to a very different level. It kind of softens it a little bit. It's a story of another day that's a huge celebration and a death that occurs during that celebration, just like ours. Yom HaShmini is a huge day. It's a tremendous celebration. But during that celebration, Aaron loses his two sons. It's a tragedy. So too, in a huge celebration of David HaMelech. David HaMelech is moving the Aaron to Ir David. It's exciting. He hasn't been able to have the Aaron in Ir David in a long time, and he's so excited to bring the Aaron. And the Aaron happens to be in the house of a guy by the name of Avi Nadav. By coincidence, Avi Nadav, Nadav and Avihu are right there in his name. Not a coincidence. Avi Nadav. And here we have a story where the children are the helpers of the father. So Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, Nadav and Avihu are the Kohanim, the helpers. Avi Nadav is the father who hosted the Aaron in his home. It was safe in his home and nobody died from the Aaron while it was in his home. And he has his two sons, Uzzah and Achyo, who are the helpers. So as we're moving the Aaron, they're driving the wagon that's moving the Aaron to Ir David. And just like within this amazing story of Chanukah's HaMishkan, Nadav and Avihu are killed, so too in this story, Uzzah touches the Aaron and he's killed on the spot. Killed on the spot. It's a terrible, terrible story. And as I mentioned here in my chart of Source 41, the language Lifnei Hashem also appears within that story. They were Misachakim Lifnei Hashem. Everybody was so excited, Lifnei Hashem, celebrating the Aaron coming to Ir David. Now, if I look at the psukim of exactly what went wrong, I gave you here in Source 42 where it's found in Shmuel Bet, but also where it's found in Divrei Hayamim, because there's more details in Divrei Hayamim. And in Divrei Hayamim, it emphasizes that he tried le'achoz et ha'aron, to touch the Aaron. At asher shalach yado al ha'aron, he touched the Aaron. That was the issue. He did something he shouldn't have done. If you look at the Gemara in Source 43, the Gemara in Sota, it actually goes in two directions of what's the issue of Uzzah and why did he die. One direction is to say he made a misjudgment. He made a mistake. He thought the Aaron was falling, so he tried to catch it. It was an innocent mistake. But Hashem got mad. The Aaron carries people. The Aaron doesn't need you to try to grab it. But that would remind me very much of the ideas I gave you here in Eben Ezra by Nadav and Avihu. Ki chashvu she'asu devar ratzui lefanav. Maybe they just thought they were doing something that they were supposed to do. Like it's an innocent mistake. But when you are Lifnei Hashem, it's significant, and therefore the punishment is death. But the other idea that comes up in the Gemara Sota is that they did something much more significantly wrong. They actually did something that was inappropriate in front of the Aaron, whether if they used the bathroom in front of the, whatever it is, they did something very inappropriate, or Uzzah did something very inappropriate in front of the Aaron, kind of mimicking these ideas that we're saying about Nadav and Avihu doing something inappropriate. If you look at Source 44, the Radak brings down, maybe the issue was when Uzzah tried to grab the Aaron, it really wasn't about the fact that he grabbed it, but more that he was even carrying it and touching it at all. Really only Ki'im B'nei Levi. Levi has to carry the Aaron. And how do we learn that lesson? Because when David tries again, he makes sure it's Kohanim and Levium that carry the Aaron. Maybe he stepped out of line. He stepped out of turn. You are not from Levi. So therefore you have no right to be the person who's chosen to touch the Aaron and to carry the Aaron. And of course that reminds us again of the idea of Nadav and Avihu feeling like, oh, we can act like a Kohen Gadol. Oh, we can do something that's out of turn, that's out of line. Or the Malbim in Source 45, in that moment, Uzzah just forgot the Kedusha of the Aaron, Shachach Kedusha's Aaron. In that moment, it was just an item that was falling and he went to grab it. And he forgot, this is Hashem's item. Hashem's not going to let it fall. He forgot he was standing in front of Hashem. And maybe in that moment, we could say again, Nadav and Avihu forgot they were Lifnei Hashem. They forgot that this is not the way you act Lifnei Hashem. But if that's true, and this is what I'll close with, Source 46, if that's true, it's more parallel to Uzzah. It was a mistaken moment. It was acting inappropriate because you're Lifnei Hashem and you forget in that moment that you're supposed to act in a totally different way, right? If I'm supposed to, then it can't be a good fire and a bad fire. A bad fire is about killing sinners. It's not about what's going on here, Nadav and Avihu. Comes the Rashbam and says, look again at the Pesukim. They're so parallel, the fire that comes down to eat the korban and the fire that comes down to eat up Nadav and Avihu, maybe, and I'll read just what I underline, Afkan Shnei Psukim Achad Hein, maybe they're the same pasuk. One fire came down from the sky and it ate up the korban, but on its way to eat the korban, They were where they weren't supposed to be. They were doing what they weren't supposed to be. So the fire hit them on its way down and they died. And then the fire continues, a little bit out of order in the Pesukim, to eat up the korban. And therefore, in that one moment, it's not that they were killed because they were sinners. They were killed because they were in an inappropriate place doing something inappropriate. They became part of the korban. They became what was sacrificed in that exact moment. If I parallel them to Korach, they're the sinners who step out of line. There's a good fire, there's a bad fire. If I parallel them to Uzzah, they were being inappropriate in that moment, in the wrong place, in the wrong time. The same fire that came down to take the korban went and killed Nadav and Avihu. It's a fascinating Rashbam, giving us a very different perspective of their sin. If I take it all back, there's so many answers. There's so many ways to look at them. And we don't know. We will never know what exactly they did wrong, what exactly they're punished for. But I see two themes, two messages. One is they acted totally inappropriately and they sinned, like Aaron Onan, like Machlon and Kilion. So they sinned. So they were punished. And that's the story. It's tragic that they're Aaron's sons, but even Aaron's sons have to be held accountable. It doesn't matter who you are. You're held accountable for what you do. But the second one, which I think is just so much more powerful, is that in that moment, they just acted inappropriately for where they were. They forgot where they were in that moment. And sometimes that is such a great message for us, because it's a message of knowing that there are places and there are times where we're meant to act differently. When we are in shul, when we are in a base medrash, when we are in the makom hamikdash, we're supposed to be different. We're supposed to be more elevated. We're supposed to act in a different way. There are days that are more elevated. Shabbos, Yom Tov, Pesach is coming, where we have to remember we're more lifnei Hashem on those days. We're meant to act differently. And I think that as we all try within our struggles of realizing Pesach is coming and balancing, as Rabbi Feldman said, between cleaning for Pesach and the spirituality of Pesach, and understanding that we're going to be more lifnei Hashem on that Seder night, talking about Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, we need to remember what it means to be lifnei Hashem. And when we are lifnei Hashem and we want Hashem to be close to us, we need to be deserving of being lifnei Hashem. We want Hashem to be with us. We need to act in a way that is lifnei Hashem. And I think that is the tremendous message of Nadav and Avihu. Thank you all very, very much. I apologize that my internet went out for a second, but I'm glad we were able to share the rest of the share together. I thank you all. And if I don't see you, I wish you a Chag Sameach. I know it's 30 days or more, you know, around there, but thank you all very much, and have a great day.